Hi, everyone. I'd like to thank you all for returning to listen to our Proctor podcast, which has been recorded and broadcast from our very own pod up here in Perthshire at head office of the A Proctor Group Limited. My name's Kira Proctor and I'm the Managing Director here. I'm sat with a couple of my colleagues, Ian Fernington and Adam Salt. So if I can ask you both to introduce yourself quickly, that would be fantastic.
Hi, I'm Ian Fernington. I'm the Technical Director. Been with the company for 32 years now, so that's who I am.
And I'm Adam Soul. I'm the business development manager, mainly looking at module and offsite in the industry. And I've been at Proctor's for 5 years now. So,
thank you, Adam. Well, it's interesting. I'm glad you said how long you've been with us, because today we are going to be discussing generational attitudes to and within the industry. So, Adam, you've obviously been with us for 5 years, and you're a young man who's 30.
Now, yeah.
I'm a relatively young lady who's 40, and Ian's just tipped over his 50s. So we've got three kind of generations here to discuss things. So I'm looking forward to starting off.
I would say that since I started 30-odd years ago, the attitudes to even coming into work has changed quite a lot. When I started, you had to wear a tie, preferably a suit, but certainly a tie. You wouldn't be able to come into the office without a tie. Yeah. That was bad form. Obviously now, it's changed quite a lot now. You're a bit more relaxed in the office, or I find I'm a lot more relaxed in the office, much more casual, and I think that helps the working environment. Personally, yeah. We're not a group of solicitors that need to wear ties or accountants.
Yeah, I think there's a time and a place to be dressed quite formal. Certain meetings, I like to, you know, put a suit on and a tie. Other meetings, a little bit more relaxed. Like today, you'll see me in my jumper and shirt. But yeah, I still like to dress smart, and allows me to sort of feel smart when I approach work, but still be relaxed and comfortable what I'm in. I think that helps.
I think probably for me, I mean, I've been MD now for over 10 years, for 11 years. But before that, when I was sales director, and actually before I was sales director, I covered the London area for a while. And it was really way back then, sort of over 10 years ago, that I started going to see architects in London. And I noticed that a lot of them would just wear jeans and a shirt. And it really confused me, because we had a very traditional way of dressing up here. So my father was always very well dressed in a suit or cords and a smart shirt and financial director. So to me, it was a bit of an eye-opener, and I thought, okay, well, if they can do it, so can we. So I started wearing jeans to the office with a nice shirt or a top when I came here, and it was frowned upon at the beginning. But I think now, I there's a concept of people dressing in what they're comfortable in, still looking smart, but from a productivity point of view, I think if people are more comfortable and they're happy with what they're wearing rather than being forced to wear a uniform and whatnot, as we did at one point many, many years ago, then it makes for a nicer working environment. And I think you're not really looked upon, as I say, like these architects that I was meeting with in London. There was no lesser because they weren't suited and booted. I think it's just a real generational change, not just in construction, across the, you know, all different types of working environments.
And we have a big mentality at Proctor's that we are a family business, and we like to feel like that family business. And I think that's quite important, that if you feel comfortable when you come to work and with your colleagues around you, that helps to emphasise that family approach.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a generational thing. I mean, I had a technical spec team running at one stage, and the variety of different ages in that was quite vast. Must have been 30 years between them. Now, one guy, the older chap, would never come to any of our meetings, as informal as they were, without a tie. Because he didn't feel that he wasn't working if he didn't have a tie on.
Yeah.
And this was quite a strange one for a lot of the younger ones in the group. And I think that's still the case, this generation of people that feel they have to wear a tie when they're at work.
And I think this extends also to the working from home kind of model that we experience now. And the construction sector is quite well known for being quite traditional. And certainly, you know, for us, the technologies that have been introduced since before COVID and during COVID, during that whole challenge of working from home, has been a huge support, not only just to the whole working from home concept and allowing our staff to work more flexibly, but also to communication in the whole sector. So it goes further than just the generational thing, should you work from home, shouldn't you? I think we were forced to move very quickly and adopt new working practices with the use of technology. You know, conference calling, video calling, messaging, you know, all these things to keep communication going. And what we've done is taken that and used it with our customers now. So a huge benefit.
Yeah, it leads some challenge. It leads to some challenges. We've still got a lot of customers still just wanting to do virtual meetings, and we want to get in front of them, demonstrate our products, let them feel and touch them, and see their quality. So that can has its pluses and minuses, I guess. Sustainability is obviously a plus as well. Less traveling, better for the environment. And quite interestingly, we've spoken before with the generational attitudes towards sustainability, especially in the construction industry when buying a house. I think you mentioned before, Ian, you'd probably look at how the kitchen looks, where a lot of people now are interested in the performance of the house, how much it's going to cost the energy bills, what's happening there, how much insulation's in your roof and all that lot as well.
I think you're right. I mean, I think we're all more environmentally conscious. Possibly the younger generation's more environmentally conscious than the older ones, but I think we all have that responsibility now, and we've burdened that responsibility more, and taking that into consideration. Going back to working from home, I love the flexibility of being able to work from home. I mean, I'm not far from the office anyway, I'm only maybe a mile from the office, but I do love the fact that I can go into my office at home. I'm more productive at home. At school, I was always told I was easily distracted, and that must be the case. When I'm down at the office here, I don't do as much as when I'm at home. Whereas I have colleagues that feel they can't do as much when they're at home. So they must be easily distracted at home, whereas I find that I can really knuckle down and do a lot more at home.
Sorry, how do you find that from a management point of view? With your teams working from home, and some people, like you say, preferring to work in the office and some people working at home, can that be quite tricky?
Yeah, it's a great point. I do come into the office 2, possibly 3 days a week. Now, that is usually for communication with my peers rather than my staff. I usually can communicate with my staff pretty well. But I think they like the fact that I'm there, and they can just come and ask me a quick question rather than try to get me on the phone or whatever. So I'm conscious that I have to balance that being there, but I don't think my management style means that I have to sit over them.
Yeah.
Nor would I want to be like that, but I do appreciate that some people do. I trust them enough to let them get on. They're a good team. Maybe I'm lucky that I've got a good team that I don't need to sit over them and make sure they're doing everything. And if I'm not there, they're going to play games or anything. It is a good point that you have to try and balance that. But I think it can be done quite easily.
Yeah, sorry to go a bit off topic there, but I was just curious.
But I mean, coming back to the younger generation within the construction sector and talking about working flexibly, it works for us because, you know, we are manufacturers and we are providers of products to the industry, but a lot of our staff are head office based or home office based. And I think one of the challenges in the industry is attracting the younger generation into the construction sector, because by default, most of the building processes don't offer remote work. So I think people in the younger generations can often be put off pursuing a career when it comes to the actual labour side of traditional construction in the UK, because it doesn't offer that flexibility. And if you look at studies, it does say that the flexibility in working environment, the ability to make choices, to work flexibly, is a huge factor in attracting young people into your workforce now, more so at times than salary. So it's that element of choice and being able to, you know, travel flexibly, work flexibly, and often the construction sector doesn't offer that.
Yeah, I joined the industry 8 years ago when I was 22 years old, and even a year before that, I would never have envisioned myself being in the construction industry. I got a computer science degree at uni and realised that wasn't the sector for me. I was quite a social person, so I wanted to kind of keep it relevant to my degree. So I looked at sales within computers and hardware and software systems. But someone gave me a call one day and said, "Do you want to sell insulation?" And I was like, "Let's have a chat and see." And it all went on from there. And what I've noticed is my perception of the construction industry was completely wrong. There's so much opportunity. There's so many different avenues you can take your career down within the construction industry. I think a lot of people just see the kind of manual labor on site, traditional built type of a work, but there is a lot of opportunity there for people.
I think you're right. I think it's probably up to the industry to promote themselves more as to the variety of different jobs people can do.
Yeah.
And I think they're quite a diverse range. You don't have to be on site with a hammer or a saw.
Yeah.
You know, there is a lot of things you can do at home. Working from home, CAD drawings. You don't have to be even at a drawing board. You know, I heard one of my colleagues speaking earlier that you don't have to draw things anymore physically on a drawing board. You know, it's a CAD and things like that, MBS specifications, can all be done at home.
Yeah.
And I think this is a great thing. And I don't think people really appreciate that. And I don't think maybe the construction industry themselves portray themselves as much as they should. Yeah. We've got a lot of women working in the construction industry now, and they're very effective. And again, I have two women in the technical office. Now, when one of them started 25 years ago, she would tell people on the phone technical advice, and she was given the attitude, some of them would say, "Can I speak to a man, please? That's very good, thanks very much." And I would be sitting opposite. They'd put the call on to me, I would say exactly the same thing, but they would take it from me rather than the woman.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't happen anymore.
Well,
not as much.
not all the time. I think it's better, but it still goes on, trust me.
And going back to your original point there of the industry being responsible for, I suppose, attracting the youngsters to join, and also, I suppose, more women, how do we do that? Where do we see that going?
I don't know. I guess it must be career advice at schools and colleges that people don't understand the opportunities in the construction industry. I mean,
yeah.
I read an article that the construction industry is pretty well paid. But I think people, certainly a few years ago, they just wanted to be in IT. Because they wanted to be in computers and things. But I think that attitude's slightly changing.
I go back to my university on a regular basis, and we do these talks to all the students. And everyone else that I do it with, they've always gone from their degree to their sector. So I'm like the unique person in the room, if you like, where I'm going, once you've got your degree, you don't just have to focus on that sector. You've shown a good skill set to learn, study, and get through that element of your life. But there's loads more opportunities for you. And that piece of paper shows that you can work hard, learn, and do that. And the construction industry for me is one of the greatest industries for giving you that opportunity to work hard, learn, and develop your skill sets, from what I've learned and felt by being in here. So, yeah.
I think it comes down to, my opinion, trying to make the sector more attractive to younger generations with the integration of technology. So in my opinion, these, you know, millennials, Generation Z, they've grown up around technology, and that's their expectation. And that's one of the reasons why we have such a shortage of labour, because in general, these generations gravitate towards jobs that utilise technology because it's what they know. But it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, the industry, we're already starting to make a lot of changes with integrated technologies, you know, use of drones, for example. There's tons of different smart ways of integrating technologies into the sector. And I think the industry is becoming more and more open and better at doing that. So I think the more that we can be accepting of new innovations, new technologies, the more interesting and attractive it's going to be to attract the young people, the younger generations into the sector.
Definitely. Well, I look after the modular sector, and the technology and the development in that sector is massive. We've got robots on the high end scale of the market, doing the whole manufacturing process. We've got loads of systems there to monitor every process of that manufacturing phase. You've then got the integration of AI into all these systems. And even in our own business, we're starting to see the integration of the likes of AI and technology to make us operate in different ways and more modern. So it's certainly coming into the industry.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think somebody once said, eventually builders won't be sitting in fields, muddy fields in the rain, having to do their work. And it's a great point that off-site and modular is a great example of doing things in the factory. So most of the labour don't have to have nail belts and hammers and things. You can do everything inside, dry environment, provide it, and then it goes to site and you're limiting the amount of time on site.
Yeah.
And you're getting a better job, better quality, potentially not the flexibility when you get to site, but you've already factored that into the factory. So I think it's a great point that can be done. And offsite's a great example, along with modular being a great example of potential ways to attract people into the market.
Definitely.
I think as well, coming back to the the generational approach, what I love and what I think I really enjoy seeing in the construction sector is this blend of generations, you know, really working together. So you have different skill sets from different generational age groups. And I think probably the biggest challenge is resisting the kind of practice of stereotyping each generational age and giving it negative connotations. You know, like I know I've probably done that during this talk with what I feel about the younger generation and their adaptation towards technology. But I mean, if you think about each generation, they all bring valuable characteristics to the industry. So, you know, traditionalists probably have a very good work ethic. Millennials really like technology, for example. Baby boomers are much more confident and independent and have a completely different, more hands-on skill set. And the Generation Z is really kind of out-the-box thinking. So if you can kind of morph those all together, if you could morph them all together and come with one very educated and capable individual, that would be great. But I think the different character traits is very useful in terms of the application actually on the project sites.
Yeah.
So what we have to try and do is create this culture of inclusion where people can learn from each other's skill sets and be adaptable to evolving, you know, to take on some of the positive traits of other generations. And maybe deflect some of the negative traits of the different generations as well. Yeah. It can be a really good vehicle to try and accomplish something in a business.
Well, we've seen that at Proctor's since I've joined 5 years ago. I joined in that sort of era where a lot of people were retiring. They'd come to sort of 30 years service at Proctor's. And now I've seen a whole kind of new wave of team come in, as well as still some of the experience. And we've got such a wide mix now across all sectors of our business. And that's really helpful for growing and developing, because we've got the experience and we've also got the attitudes of the younger generation as well.
I think it's a great point that you make on even using Proctor as an example. You know, we do have that variety. We're pretty tolerant to each other. Most of the time. But yeah, it's a good mix. Just going back to Kira's point, you know, getting that mix right. You're not going to get somebody that perfectly fits everything, but as long as you've got the main parts and you can use the parts appropriately. But it's like education. You know, education in my day, if you want to be educated, you had to sit in a building that was either a school or it was a college or a university. But now there's so many other ways to be educated. You know, during the COVID pandemic, we started the webinars, and they were great fun for us to do, but they were a very much a successful way of teaching people from their desks, from our desk to their desk, giving people the live questions and answers as well, giving them that opportunity to be able to speak was fantastic. So, you know, even today, doing this podcast will be another way of educating yourself and listening to other views. And I guess most of us all do that now, where we become different ways to educate ourselves.
Well, even with the webinars, we saw that because our webinars started off as heavy technical approach, which is what our business has been sort of known for. And then I sort of pushed the idea of let's try and do some more toolbox talks, and, you know, going back to more the basics of how to install our products and everything, which we were a bit unsure about because a lot of our audience like know us for the technical side, but they went down really well as well, bringing a different approach to the webinars, and we've seen them develop with those attitudes.
Absolutely. I think one of the difficulties you've got, I sit in British Standards, and I've sat in British Standards for over 20 years. Now, it was quite an accolade to be considered to be on a British Standard, so BS5250-5534. It was great to sit there and have this in this room of a wealth of knowledge. But I would be sitting in there at the age of 30 as the young whippersnapper that had these newfangled ideas of breather membranes. Unfortunately, when I look around that table now, I'm still the young whippersnapper at 54.
That's terrifying.
It is.
Wow. And,
you know, there's no youngsters coming up. The older generation have retired, but they've been kept on as consultants to go to these British Standards.
So there's not. Why is that, Ian? Is there a lack of interest in the younger generation, or what? Where are they?
I don't know. When we look out for people, new people, any suggestions? We quite often have at the start of the meeting, any suggestions? Who we're missing? What industries are we need to get people representing? It's really difficult to get young people to come out of these committees.
I think from my point of view, when I think of British Standard, I think of a very traditional approach to it, writing documents, everyone checking over the wording, and it just doesn't seem like a bit of an attractive process. But it is, because we're setting the guidance and the standards going forward for the construction industry, and it's how we get that message across, I think, is going to attract people. Education being the key part, I believe, to play in that.
I think it's a fair point that people do think that it's sitting there just reading documents and editing, proofreading documents. But
yeah,
there's actually a lot of interest and work that people are doing to help form the standards as we're progressing, which is real education for any of the people attending the meetings. And we have to impart that. But it would be great to have youngsters come into there. So I'm not the young whippersnapper at the age of 54. You need to have younger people coming in to replace us.
I almost think it's a marketing issue. I know that sounds strange, but I almost think there's a perception out there, as Adam rightly said, you know, this is probably what happens at those types of meetings. Very typecast, but that's just what it is. And probably that organisation, or many different organisations within the construction sector, are not marketing themselves as being technically savvy, fast moving, flexible, interesting, you know, and that you can actually make a difference by being part of this committee, this group, this sector. So I almost think probably there needs to be a commitment from people in the construction sector, even companies like ourselves, you know, increase the visibility of these types of groups or your business or your brand, and essentially try and embed that technology, be it maybe on your website. You could have, you know, videos talking about what it does. So reach out in ways that younger generations are going to associate with to make it seem like it's something they may want to even hear more about, let alone get involved with.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And you mentioned marketing there, Kira. Something I want to talk about is LinkedIn. I hear a lot of people in the industry say, oh, I don't do LinkedIn. I won't do LinkedIn. Don't like it. Which I don't quite get. I see it's a fantastic tool to get, first of all, yourself, your own brand out there, but also your businesses and drive a lot of business to yourself as well. But I'd be interested to know your views on social media and LinkedIn. And maybe that could be a route to attracting more people to understand the British standards and the processes.
I think that's probably a generational thing. I do LinkedIn. I like LinkedIn. I find it interesting, and I do post things on LinkedIn. Probably not as much as I should. But I'm okay with LinkedIn. I don't have Facebook. Now, that's a generational thing. I don't do Facebook.
I don't really do Facebook either, to clarify.
If I need something on Facebook, I'll ask my wife to look at it, and then I'll have a look and do the stalking from there. But
a secret Facebook stalker.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I guess it was when Facebook was first talked about, introduced, it was more for catching up with people from school and old contacts and things like that. I didn't really want to do that. I kept in touch with the people I wanted to keep in touch with. I hope that nobody else that was at school with me listens to this, but if you haven't heard from me, you know why. But, you know, LinkedIn, I find it's almost Facebook for adults, and that's what I tell my kids all the time. Yeah. And I find it quite educational.
We found it a great tool at Proctors to get our message out to the market. And I think if you're not using it as a tool, I think it's something to certainly look at within the industry. It's very popular and can be very key to probably driving more younger generations to understand your message and what's actually going on, and get rid of some of those perceptions that we talked about.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I first took over the business about that 10, 11 years ago, and some on the board of directors, when we're talking about the importance of social media, I did a presentation to you all. Do you remember that, Ian? Maybe you don't. I did a presentation about social media and the importance of it, which I probably wouldn't take the time to do now. I would just do something. But at the time, I was trying to convince you all the importance of it. And the perception very much was, well, ooh, okay, well, you know, we'll allow that, but only during lunchtime. We don't want anyone going on LinkedIn out with lunch, and we don't want people looking on Facebook for customers. And tweeting is what owls do, isn't it? Genuinely, this was the
wow.
This was the so I think we've come a long way, and I think the perception of generally, you know, social media, and we also all live probably can be quite blinkered lives, so it can be an outlet for a lot of young people to communicate, to see what's going on in the industry. A lot of individuals now, especially post-COVID, and I don't just mean the younger generation, I mean in general, you know, if they can do something virtually rather than getting on a plane, which is going to be impacting the environment in terms of travel, time out, driving places, you know, the whole environmental factor is becoming a lot more important. So if we can do things smarter, quicker and more environmentally friendly, I think there's been a huge shift in certainly the past 4 or 5 years towards that.
Yeah, a lot of the meetings I go to now, you have to log the vehicle you've driven down in, the type of engine it's got, the amount of miles you traveled, because every business is now analyzing sustainability, and then I suppose you're looking at, did I need that meeting at the office? Could it have been done virtually? And it's a good way to take the industry forward, and a good thing to do. We still do need some elements of those face-to-face meetings and site visits and everything, but there is now technology to help us.
I would say, yeah, you've got to balance that. You can do lots of things virtually. You know, you can have virtual meetings, you can have virtual CPDs even, which I think is an argument that's maybe a bit too far.
Yeah.
But, you know, well-being of staff is really important. And yeah, you can work from home 5 days a week, and yeah, you get the work done, but you still need to balance that off with a bit of social interaction.
Yes.
And that's really so important for your well-being. I'm okay with that. You know, I could work from home 5 days a week without the social interaction, I think. But that's because, you know, you've got other things to do at the weekends and things like that. But I think we have to take that into consideration. And certainly at Proctor's and in the rest of the industry, well-being is taken seriously. So you have to take that into consideration, that it's not all just work, work, work. You've got to balance it with making sure that people are happy.
Oh, I think mental health in the construction sector is a huge thing. General well-being and mental health, and it's probably not something that's been taken very seriously until the last sort of 7, 8, 10 years, I would say. And there's a lot of good inroads being made by different organisations to look at the mental health of people in construction, which is fantastic. And I think the benefits of working from home and the flexibility is one thing, but then how can you continue to manage those staff from an inclusivity point of view and make sure that they're checked in on and that they're being supported and that they're happy and they're enjoying their work environment and that they're delivering, not just for the business, but also for themselves. So I think there's a fine balance between, you know, the well-being and then the flexibility working from home, because we do not want that. Certainly as a business owner and MD, I don't want that turning into isolation. So I think you've raised a really good point there, Ian.
It's one of our biggest challenges in the external team, where we are positioned all over the different parts of the country and we can go months without seeing each other. And, you know, we're just going to meeting and then working from home on our admin days. And you can have that kind of bit of disconnect that you might get in an office, where you have a bit of a social chat and a bit of a laugh and people make you smile when you're having a hard day. So it's hard for us to manage in the external team, but we find our ways. We, you know, call each other when we can and try and catch up if we're in local areas and make that bit of effort. But that's probably been driven by these companies and these organisations that are making mental health more aware within the industry. Mm-hmm. So it's important we keep talking about it.
Good. So I think we're running out of time now. So that's been a really interesting discussion from three different generations around the table here in our Proctor Pod. So I want to thank Ian and Adam for joining me here today up at our head office.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners. We do have more episodes of our Proctor podcast coming out. So please keep your ears peeled for the next one. And I hope you can join us and that you've enjoyed today. Thank you.